Welcome to the Invest with Clarity podcast, where you will learn how success in investing, as in life, is the result of absolute clarity. Mark Pearson of Nepsis in Minneapolis, Minnesota, shares his passion for portfolio management and commitment to transparency and communication to allow investors to fully understand what they own and why, bringing them to clarity in their investments. And now, here are your co-hosts, Matt Halloran and Mark Pearson.
Hello and welcome to episode number 10. Today, Mark Pearson and I are going to talk about something that many of you are probably not familiar with, but after you hear the title of the podcast and after the explanation of what this is, I think you're going to want to give Nepsis a call. And the podcast title today is Don't Be Just Another Dull Bar Statistic. Now, obviously, Mark, we have to tell everybody what the heck the Dull Bar is. So can you start with that?
Yeah, absolutely. Dull Bar is an independent research organization that studies investor behavior relative to performance of markets. Gotcha. So they do a quantitative study on investor behavior and performance and how behavior affects their investment performance.
Well, this is right up the alley of what you and I have talked about many, many times, because we've talked about the cycle of investor emotions. We've talked about how performance does impact, or the lack of performance impacts behavior. In the markets have been a little volatile lately. So how are we going to make it so that these people aren't going to just be another statistic from this report?
I'm so glad you asked. I think that the main reason you get people to not be another statistic is by educating them about the things to look out for, so they can avoid those mistakes when it comes to their investment process and their investment experience.
Part of investing with clarity really is that education. So why don't you give us just another brief glimpse into the ideas behind how this just once again just falls right into line with what Nepsis does for their clients?
You bet. So let me start with, according to the Dull Bar study, Matt, it talks about the three reasons for investors' shortfall. Shortfalls meaning the performance of their portfolio. In the Dull Bar's case, they use the S&P 500.
Okay.
And, of course, most investors do that, to which, of course, you've heard me say a million times, do not compare your portfolio to the S&P 500.
Right.
Because if all your money is in the S&P 500, you're not investing appropriately in the first place.
Yeah, yeah.
Benchmarks are nothing more than an excuse for somebody to justify their job.
Mm-hmm.
So, at the end of the day, what are the three main reasons investors have shortfalls? So, number one, psychological factors makes up 50% of the investor's shortfall.
Whoa.
25% is capital not available to invest. Capital not available mm-hmm. to invest. People often ask during corrections, how can I take advantage of the correction if all my money's invested? You can if you're invested accordingly. We can mm-hmm. talk about that later. The third, of course, 25% is capital needed for other purposes. In other words, in the midst of a correction, someone says, you know, I need money for XYZ. They end up taking the money out. But the biggest one we should focus on, of course, is the 50% part of the pie, half the pie, which is psychological factors. And I don't know, I can't remember, man, if we've talked about, you know, all of the different psychological things investors go through, like loss aversion and anchoring and mental accounting and all that, which is, we could talk about it a little bit here. But to answer your question, the whole idea, the whole basis for Nepsis, of course, Nepsis, as you know, is a Greek word, which means to be watchful, alert, vigilant, with a clear and sober mind against illusions of fear, thus allowing one to obtain ultimate clarity. Fear is, and many times comes from uncertainty. Volatility creates fear and uncertainty to the investor. So how do you give greater certainty, greater clarity to the investor so that they understand that when there is volatility, it's not fearful, it's opportunity. It is the ability to take advantage of buying businesses on sale. That is investing with clarity, i.e. www.investwithclarity.com.
You did talk about loss aversion, and we talked about the 50% psychological component of these three reasons. We have not really, we've dipped our toes in the water on other podcasts, but I would love to spend just a few minutes talking about those major components of behavioral psychology. Even if we have covered this, it's definitely something that bears repeating.
Sure. So there's a couple. Let's start with loss aversion, and then we can go to lack of diversification, or what I refer to, not lack of diversification, but lack of asset allocation. Mm-hmm. Because investors view asset allocation, diversification the same. They're used synonymously. I can't say the word.
That's good. Yeah, I got you.
So we'll cover that in a second. Let's go to loss aversion. There's been, as you know, many psychological studies on behavior. And during loss, when people feel a loss in their investments, the pain they feel is five times greater than the euphoria they feel when they're making money. Mm-hmm. So it can be argued that an investor, when they're making money, they're happy. Euphoria, maybe, who knows, but they're happy, right? And many investors, I think, Matt, unequivocally have a very unrealistic expectation when it comes to investing. Investors, I've met so many investors that expect their portfolio to be up every year. Mm-hmm. And when they tell that to me, I always say, well, who determined that a portfolio should be up every year? Well, I don't know. Well, okay. I mean, did the stock market tell you that, or did the companies tell you that? Did businesses tell you that? Mm-hmm. We have created, financial advisors in the industry has created a false expectation of performance for investments. The fact of the matter is, I just had this conversation with an advisor 10 minutes ago. If you're going to invest in stocks, you have to take a minimum of a five-year time horizon. Because this guy says to me, well, how'd you do during 2008? What did you tell clients? How'd you do, when the market was going down 38% in 2008? I say it was a huge buying opportunity, because if you have trained your investors to understand reasonable expectations, i.e. a five-year time horizon, then you should, as an investor, allow yourself be able to stick to the knitting, as we like to say. Mm-hmm. So people feel five times greater pain when things are going down, when things are going up. And of course, when you're feeling pain, what is the natural human reaction that you want to do to get rid of the pain? You want to fix it. You want to do whatever is needed to fix the pain. What do you do to fix the pain? Most investors sell the investments, and they sell it usually at the lows, right? What we say to alleviate the pain is to buy more of the investment on sale, because you're buying it at a cheaper price, and you're not going to sell it for at least 3, 5, 10 years anyways. Mm-hmm. So what do you care what the stock price is doing now? But loss aversion, obviously, is one of the many different behavioral aspects that put people in a psychological position that they want to sell. And as you know, they buy at tops and they sell at lows.
Anchoring.
Yes.
And anchoring is a very powerful psychological technique that allows people to have something make them behave in a different way. How do you, through education, make your clients make that psychological switch between, if they start feeling that loss aversion in Nepsis's mind, it isn't a bad thing. Again, it's that positive. So what sort of stuff from an educational standpoint do you take your clients and advisors through to help them identify and anchor it in a different direction?
Yeah, great question. So it starts with our website URL. When an investor goes to our website right away, what are they typing in?
Investwithclarity.com.
Mm-hmm. Psychologically, we are beginning to drip on them the idea that successful investing is about investing with clarity. What does investing with clarity mean? Know what you own and why you own it. Investors don't think that way. There's a great video clip floating around on Facebook right now with Becky Quick from CNBC interviewing Warren Buffett. And Warren Buffett said in the clip, I mean, he must be listening to our podcast. That's only
fake. Yeah, I agree.
What he says to Becky is that, investors don't view their portfolio as owning small pieces of businesses. And that's really what they do. You're a business owner. You are an investor in a business or businesses. The investor's mentality, though, because the industry has trained them this way, to think, well, I'm invested in the stock market. And of course, many investors say, particularly business owners, by the way, Matt, say, I don't like to invest in the stock market. I'd rather invest in my own business because at least I know what I own. And this is the problem with why everyone is running to cheap index funds and the idea of just buy the indexes. And as the Dalbar study talks about, many investors underperform the S&P 500 because they're not taking into consideration the behavioral aspect of investing. They're only looking at the empirical aspect, which is the idea of I am quantifiably investing in the market. I put X amount of dollars in, I've made X amount of dollars, or I lost X amount of dollars. That's not how you should view investing. Investing should be viewed as a process of continually investing in great businesses over time. So to real quickly dig deeper to your question about how do we educate clients, we're constantly dripping information on them using our compasses, our white papers. Mm-hmm. We do a quarterly video. We do a quarterly write-up about the portfolio, what's happening with the markets, what's happening with the economy, what's happening with businesses that we own in their portfolio to continually engage them in understanding you own real businesses here. These are great businesses. Many of them you do business with or buy their products. I often say to people, do you have a Visa card? Matt, do you have a Visa card, by the way?
I do, yes.
I want to thank you for contributing to one of the companies I own. Mm-hmm. Thank you for your patronage. That's the mentality the investor should have about their investments. Not, well, I'm invested in the S&P 500, and gee, it was down 3 points today, and I lost money today. No, you don't lose anything until you sell it.
Right.
So at the end of the day, educating the client on, number one, Matt, expectations for their money, and number two, explaining to them what they own and why they own it, should, as we have seen historically, unequivocally, enhance the psychological makeup of the investor to stick to the knitting.
I had this massive epiphany. I don't know if you heard the gears grinding in my brain there. When my kids
out, I had to turn you down.
They're pretty rusty. When my kids were really young, I was showing them. We had a 529 plan for them, and I was showing them the stocks that they owned, and I was explaining to them who it was. And I mean, they were stocks that I thought they could understand: automotive stock, technology stock, and actually oil and gas, and I think the other one was a mining company.
Yes.
Because the kids, you know, one of my kids loved to dig in the dirt. And so I was explaining that we're driving down the road, Mark, and the car company that my kids own, one of their cars drove by, and he looks at me and he goes, Dad, do I own part of that car? And I said, yes, you do. But you know what? I've never heard it said like that. And so that was a major epiphany for me, because that's, and maybe this is just, somebody must have trained me the way that you're training your clients, which is probably why I like most of what you say, because, I think you're spot on. But that to me was a major epiphany. Now, I want to switch gears a little bit, because another aspect of investing with clarity.
Hey, by the way, wait.
Oh, yeah.
Before you go, can I give you a real quick story?
Sure.
I love to tell this story. So I have a son who now works in the firm, Matt. Matt's 24 now. When Matt was a kid, he was a hockey player. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And when he was young at high, I think he was probably around the age of 10 at the time, Under Armour had just come out. Oh. And a lot of the kids were wearing the Under Armour gear. Mm-hmm. And of course, Matt was really interested in the business. He'd sit down next to me with his fake computer and type on his computer and pretend that he's looking at stocks on the stock market. Mm-hmm. Right. So he says, Dad, you need to buy Under Armour. You've got to buy Under Armour. This stuff is phenomenal. Uh-huh. And of course, he knows I buy stocks, right?
Uh-huh.
Well, at the time, the stock's not public yet. It's pre going public. And eventually, it did go public at like $5 a share.
Ugh.
Dad, you got to buy it. You got to buy it. I never bought it. I shouldn't say never. That was probably 2007 that conversation was had. Maybe, mm-hmm. no, 2004.
Okay.
2003, 2004. Long story longer, I didn't buy it at $5. I ended up starting to buy it at a much higher price, and off the top of my head, I can't remember what the price was, but I started buying it in 2011, 5 years, 6 years, 7 years later, at a much higher price. And even after I bought the stock split 3 times. But here's a great example of somebody who knew a product they love. Now, this does not mean that every product you use is a great investment. Understand that.
Mm-hmm.
But many investors, psychologically, Matt, will invest in something and not really care about what the actual rate of return is of it at the end of the day. They want to make money, but they want to have a connection to what they own, mm-hmm. and why they own it. And the more you can bridge that gap psychologically with the investor, the more apt they are to not become just another Dalbar statistic.
One of the other three reasons why people would become a Dalbar statistic from a behavioral standpoint, not just the psychological, which I think we addressed rather well there, but also the availability of capital to take advantage of what you consistently say is opportunity when there is volatility or when the market goes down. Talk to us once again about your process when it comes to that. You just said a few minutes ago, well, you know, when the market's down, it's a great opportunity. I'm going to buy more of stocks that I really like. How do you do that?
You know, you are so dang good. It's darn near disgusting.
Was that a compliment there?
Well, absolutely. Okay. Well, we talked about lack of diversification, right?
Yes.
We've talked about this on other shows. Many investors have the idea that if I own 15 mutual funds, or even if I own 3 mutual funds, well, I'm diversified. Yeah, ooh, you are diversified, but you may not be appropriately asset allocated.
Right.
And the industry has done a poor job of educating investors on the power of asset allocation and focusing more on beating an index. And an index gives you diversification. It does not give you asset allocation. Mm-hmm. And so if you're appropriately asset allocated, and by the way, for those who don't know the difference, diversification is owning many of the same type of investment. Asset allocation is owning multiple investments from multiple asset allocation classes, i.e. Cash, mm-hmm, bonds, U.S. stocks versus international or emerging market stocks, owning non-correlated assets to the stock market, if you will. And I don't want to go super technical, mm-hmm, but the bottom line is, as you know, we do this investment stress test. It's a proprietary process we've created about a year and a half ago to dig deep into a client's portfolio, help them really understand what they own. Every single stress test I've done, the portfolio has been inadequately asset allocated.
Sure.
That's massive. And so when you're appropriately asset allocated, what corrections allow us to do, to answer your question on what do we do, even if I'm 100% invested, the asset allocation strategy, along with our sell and buy discipline, allow us the flexibility to buy more on sale. So for an example, we have a correction. Lots of stuff goes down, but not everything goes down. And in fact, not everything goes down as much. Some things may even go up in price during a correction.
Mm-hmm.
You as an investor, as it says in this thing here, capital not available to invest, that is because they don't have the flexibility to take gains in one area, tax loss harvest in an area, sell a weaker position to buy a stronger position during that correction. They static asset allocate. They rebalance the entire portfolio. But successful investing is not about rebalancing an entire portfolio at one time. It is about strategically investing in the areas that are more on sale than others by selling profit from the other areas or tax loss harvesting in other areas. I'll give you one really quick example.
Mm-hmm.
About 9 months ago, we had a lot of storms going on, right?
Mm-hmm.
And insurance stocks were getting hammered. And we owned a reinsurance stock. We had just started investing in about 4 or 5 months earlier. And the stock was down like 25% since we bought it. And it wasn't a stock issue. It wasn't an individual company issue. It was a sector issue, mm-hmm, at the time, right? Mm-hmm. So everything in the sector is going down. So we sold the position, took the tax loss harvest on it, went and bought another position that was a better company in the sector, also with a higher dividend rate, by the way, on sale as well. Ironically, 2 months ago, 5 or 6 months later after we had bought that stock, that company was bought by AIG for 35% premium.
Oh my gosh.
You see, successful investing, as you've often heard me say, is about the four keys to successful investing. Philosophy and strategy are the empirical components. Flexibility and transparency are the behavioral components.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm,
if you don't want to be another Dalbar statistic, what you have to focus on in your portfolio is knowing what you own and why you own it and allowing and enabling flexibility and transparency to enhance your investment experience.
Let's switch gears and talk about the third category, which is need for other things. And you've talked before about well, you actually said it on this podcast. Well, you know, I've lost X amount of money because the S&P is down a specific percentage. Talk to us about how you explain the difference between the imagined losses and the realized losses when it comes to investor emotions.
Sure. Well, investors psychologically, when they see their portfolio going down, they have this preconceived notion that they've lost money because it's just on paper.
Mm-hmm.
They haven't lost, and conversely, to be fair, Matt, if an investment's gone up a lot in value, you haven't made money either. You haven't made money until you sell, which is part of the reason why one of our sell disciplines is to take profit in a position. Don't sell it, but just take some profit off the table and lock in some gains, right?
Mm-hmm.
So investors have this preconceived notion because this is, again, what the industry is teaching them, especially as they're telling them more and more to buy indexes, right? Which I think is a complete disservice to the investor because it inhibits the investor from really sticking to the knitting from a behavioral standpoint. So what we tell the investor is your portfolio is down right now, but you haven't lost any money because you're not selling it. You're not selling anything right now. So why do you think you've lost money? Well, that's what my statement says. Listen, you want me to print you a statement that shows you're up $100,000? Well, no, because that's not real. Well, guess what? The statement you're looking at ain't real either.
Oh, yeah.
It's just a snapshot in given time. And so when you can explain that to the investor and help them understand that, and they have them focus on their goals and their objectives and what their long-term plan is, and also, by the way, your portfolio is allocated to your investment objectives and your tolerance for risk and volatility, stick to the process.
Mm-hmm.
It all starts, though, Matt, it has to start with the foundation. And the foundation is that the more you understand about what you own and why you own it, the more it should enhance your ability to invest with success.
A wise man once told me that fear stands for false evidence appearing real. And you just nailed that like right on the head, because that statement that I get, like I get statements from my advisor all the time. And, you know, I don't even look at them. And I remember going in for an annual review and he said to me, you know, Matt, so you've been tracking what you're doing on in your or what's going on in your statements. I was like, no. He's like, well, why? I'm in accumulation phase, buddy. I'm putting money in. I'm not taking any money out right now. So anyway, but false evidence appearing real. I really do think that that's very applicable because that's what those statements are. That's not evidence. It's not. It's a snapshot in time. And that could have been pulled, you know, when the market pooped itself for 15 minutes. And that's when they ran the report.
Yeah, you know, it's a great point. And interestingly, the custodian we're at right now, which is Trust Company of America, who has recently been purchased by E-Trade, so we're soon going to be E-Trade, believe it or not. We only send out statements quarterly.
Oh, man.
So I would almost rather send statements out just annually.
Yeah.
Because we tell investors, don't focus on one aspect. Focus on the entire process. And we talk about the companies we own in the portfolio, that no one company makes or breaks the portfolio. Every company owned in the portfolio is owned for a specific reason to accomplish a long-term goal. There's going to be dogs. There's going to be great ones. But at the end of the day, it's everything working together for the greater cause over a long period of time. In other words, investment success is actually more about process, not knowing what you own and why you own it. Knowing what you own and why you own it is the behavioral aspect of investing. The empirical component, the idea of the process, is what enables an investor to be successful over time. I always tell investors, don't ask what the fees are and don't ask what the rate of return was for the last 5 years, because both are not important. Mm-hmm. What is important is, what's the investment objective? What is the investment process? How do you make your buy decisions? How do you make your sell decisions? What do you own and why you own it becomes a secondary component of the overall process.
So if your brain right now has exploded moderately inside your skull, which I'm sure many of your brains have, it's doing that because what Nepsis and what Mark is talking about is a fundamental psychological paradigm shift. That's what's happening here. And the more you listen to these podcasts, the more you listen and see what Nepsis is putting out, the more comfortable I believe you will be with your overall retirement plan, investment plan, whatever you want to call this, because it gives you the opportunity to do exactly what he's talking about. clarity surrounding this is almost the opposite of what the big firms want you to have, because, well, I really don't know why they don't want you to have clarity, but you give them clarity, Mark. You know, that'd be a great other podcast. We should really attack that at some point. Why is it? Why is it that people that the marketplace and advertisements, all of those people don't want?
That's easy.
Oh, it is. Oh, well, answer the question. That's sweet.
Well, how do investment firms make money? Buying and selling securities.
Right.
The more fearful people are in periods of volatility like we are now, what happens? There's more trading.
That's right.
When there's more trading, there's more revenue, there's more profit. So it's not necessarily in the client's best interest. Look, I'm not saying firms act this way. It just seems to be a commonsensical position to say that during periods of volatility, people do more trading.
Hmm.
People do more buying and more selling in general. And that creates revenue.
Yeah.
That's how they make money. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing wrong with that. That's how they do business. It's not wrong. It's not right. Because different people have different beliefs about how their money should be managed. In my opinion, though, I believe the more that you own, the more you know about what you own and why you own it. More importantly, from a behavioral standpoint, the more apt you are to stick to it.
Right. All right. You want to sum up why we want to make sure that people don't just become another doll bar statistic?
I don't know if I can do it any better than I just said.
Yeah, okay,
you know,
great.
Sticking to the name of knowing what you own and why you own it, yeah. Big Daddy.
Yeah. All right. Well, with all of that, if you have not subscribed to the podcast, make sure that you take a moment and hit the subscribe now button below, because that way every time Mark comes out with a new idea, new podcast, and something else that you truly need to know about how to invest with clarity, it'll show up right on your listening device. Mark, thank you for your time today.
Thanks again, Matt. Always good to be with you.
And for everybody else at Nopsis, this is Matt Halloran, and we will see you on the other side of the mic very soon.
The content discussed is for informational purposes only. It is not a solicitation or recommendation for any securities that may be mentioned herein. Advisory services offered through Nopsis, Inc., an SEC-registered investment advisor.